Okay, members, we're going to call this meeting, while we can't officially call it to order, we don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to get started. We have a couple of bills to hear today, including some of the number of testifiers. We are going to try to move in an orderly fashion and allow for fair time, equal time for presenters and for and against. So with that, I'm going to welcome Representative Anderson to our committee. Welcome, Representative Anderson. And Representative Anderson, you are moving, or we will move, Omnibus House File 1956 be recommended to pass and be referred to the General Register. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'll be brief. I want to be respectful of your time today. This piece of legislation, what it does is it requires that law enforcement officers, when they arrest somebody for whatever crime it may be, and they find within their possession multiple EBT cards, that they share that information with the Department of Human Services so that then the Department of Human Services can issue an investigation if need be to see if fraud has occurred or abuse of the use of the cards. This is a tool meant to help out our Department of Human Services to make sure that the resources that we have are going to those folks that are in most need, and also just to maintain the program integrity of the electronic benefit transfer cards. So that's it in a nutshell, and I stand for any questions.
Very good. Members, any questions of Representative Anderson on this bill? Seeing none, I think we'll move to testimony on the bill. Do you have any testifiers for the bill?
Mr. Chair, I do have the department is here. If you don't mind, they can speak to it a little bit.
Very good. Absolutely. The department could come forward to the testifying table, and then there we go. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services. I'm mainly here just to answer any questions, but I'll just say that this bill is going to be helpful for us, and we're very thankful to Representative Anderson for a little amendment that she was agreeable to in Public Safety Committee. So if there's any questions about this, I can try and answer them.
Hey, members, any questions, the department or the author? Yes, Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you please explain how this bill will be helpful for DHS?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moran, one of the things that we don't know, and we heard some testimony to this effect Public Safety Committee was about how often this happens. How often are there issues when people have more than one card? And we have anecdotal information, but what this bill will do is it will require that reporting to be made when somebody's arrested for some crime and they happen to have multiple cards in their possession, but that information will be reported to the Department of Human Services. So that's the first thing that's going to be helpful is that we're going to gather some data on that, and we'll be a year from now be able to answer some questions about how often this happened. But then we're going to take that information, and one of the things we spent some time talking about is that it's not always illegal for somebody to have more than one card in their possession. And so it isn't automatically and categorically a problem. But what this will do is that the information will come to us, and we'll make sure that report gets out to the right county investigator, and they'll look into the situation and just determine whether it's problematic or not. And so hopefully a year from now we'll be able to report on some of those results too. What was the outcome of this bill?
Very good, Representative Maroon. Okay, any other questions, members? Is there anybody from the public wanting to testify for or against the bill? For or against this bill? Anybody wanting to testify?
Right here.
Why don't you come down to the testifying table then, please? Welcome to the committee. Members, as our testifiers making their way to the table, I will officially call the meeting to order now that we have a quorum, and I will ask for a motion on our minutes from February 21st. Representative Benson moves the minutes February 21st. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the minutes are adopted. I will also officially move. I will also officially move House File 1956 now that we have a quorum, and move it to pass with the recommendation to pass, and then move to the General Register. Okay, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Ebony Harris. I am a single mother of four kids in North Minneapolis, a domestic abuse survivor as well. I feel this bill that I looked over this bill with the EBT multiple cards. First thing, this is the first time I've heard of anybody carrying multiple cards because you can't. The way how the county does things, you can only have one active card at a time. So I don't know who is carrying multiple cards or whatever, but I'm starting to think this is a stereotype. This bill is very mean-spirited to the poor and working class people like myself. I am one of many people that's been laid off for the third time, and I have yet to hear anybody talk about livable wage jobs. It's just, it's criminalizing. This bill seems, especially with the EBT cards, it seems like that you're just criminalizing poor people. And if this bill passes, Minnesota will be devastated like you wouldn't believe. I'm a lifelong resident of Minnesota, and I'm seeing the quality of life go down, and it just seems like every year I'm hearing about these bills and these laws being passed to criminalize basically being poor. The question I have that it seems like doesn't get the answer is why? Why are we criminalizing poor people in Minnesota when Minnesota was always known for being nice? And I'm beginning to think Minnesota nice is a myth. So that's why I'm here to testify against this bill. This bill, EBT, that's the least of our concerns in the state regarding who is having more than one card. I'm not going for it. So I'm against this bill. If you pass this bill, just know there will be more poverty and disenfranchisement like you wouldn't believe. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we have a question. Representative Franson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ebony?
Yes.
Thank you very much for your heartfelt plea. I'm just questioning. I do believe that you said right now that this is not an issue, correct? Carrying multiple cards?
Yes, I did. I don't know anybody or have not ever even heard of anything. I haven't seen anything in media or anything about people carrying more than one EBT card. Is that's correct, right? You're talking about EBT cards.
That is correct.
Okay, no. Because if you have two cards, one of those cards might be non-active. Because in order to, you can't, that's what I understand, because you can't have more than one card. Because if I have my EBT card and I have another one, that one has to be deactivated before I can use that one. So I don't understand why that's an issue.
Representative Franson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Ebony, and thank you for that answer. I think that what this bill is getting at is just the protection of the taxpayer dollars. And right now you're saying that this is not an issue on people carrying multiple cards. Mm. So if it's not an issue and this bill passes, what changes?
Well, what changes is just more, it's just more criminalizing and humiliation for people like me. You say something about tax dollars, about taxpayers. Not once have anybody mentioned that working class people and poor people working for less than livable wage, they're taxpayers too. Mm-hmm. And it seems like that is what's getting lost in the conversation here.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Ebony, I can empathize with the livable wage. I have a part-time second job that pays $8.56 an hour, so I can empathize with the low wages here. The issue just here is that we just are looking at protecting, you're not supposed to carry two active EBT cards. So This is not an issue currently. You're saying people do not carry this, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So then passing this bill should not be an issue if it's not an issue already.
No, it shouldn't. But however, for people that are even applying, it's a tedious process. And it's very humiliating. It's very stressful. It's demeaning, period. And you talk about people that are taxpayers, again, you're not thinking about people that are poor, that are working, that they're taxpayers too. Bottom line, if this bill, like I said, if this bill passes, we will all be sorry. That's it.
Thank you, Ms. Harris, for your testimony. Representative Norton.
Thank you. To the testifier, could you stay, please? I'm over here. What I heard you say is that people might have two EBT cards, but if they did, one might be not activated.
And that's if...
Ms. Harris.
I'm sorry. That's if they had two cards. I don't understand, why would a person have two EBT cards?
Thank you, and that's what I'm getting at.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's possible to have two cards, but one is not activated, that's even a possibility. We might be making false accusations of someone if one is not active and one is. And so I guess I don't understand if that's a possibility. This is concerning. So I guess I would need to know, and the testifier may not have that answer. We may need someone from the department to say, is it possible for someone to have an active one and an inactive one in their possession, or an adult child's, you know, if they went shopping for someone, are we addressing those types of situations with this bill?
No, it wouldn't. If they have an active
Ms. Harris,
card, I'm sorry.
We go through the chair. It's just I recognize you, and then I recognize.
Oh, okay.
That's how it works.
So it's my turn?
Yep, you're
okay.
Fine. Go ahead.
I just want to make sure. Okay, if you have two cards, okay, you're not. What person is going to carry around a dead card that's inactive that you couldn't use? So why would they even need to carry this multiple card in the first place? So I'm going back to you. This might be false accusations because it's, to be honest with you, I'm floored that this is that we're even sitting here discussing two EBT, multiple EBT cards. And if that's that sounds like an internal issue.
Ms. Harris, we've got a couple of people here who could speak to this. One is the author, Representative Anderson. The other is Mr. Kerber, who is here from the department. And I'm wondering if either or both of you would care to address Representative Norton's question.
Thank you,
Mr. Kerber.
Chair.
Or Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the impetus for this entire piece of legislation, it comes from a law enforcement officer who has made arrests for individuals that have committed whatever act, and then when they go through the procedure of checking them in, have found within their possession more than one EBT card. So that raises the question of, is fraud being committed, or is this just a situation? It may be a situation where, hey, they were helping out a neighbor that needed groceries, so give me your card, I'll go get groceries, and by the way, I have my card in my possession as well. This isn't to penalize people that do that at all. This is to understand if people are carrying multiples, but they're doing it in a fraudulent manner, meaning that maybe they stole the card, or who knows what has happened. This at least gives the Department of Human Services the opportunity to be notified that a person has more than one EBT card in their possession, and then they can initiate an investigation to see if fraud has been committed. But the department can speak to this because they've already had conversations with law enforcement officials on this matter already.
Mr. Kerber?
Mr. Chair, I might just add that I think one of the things that this is going to do is going to provide some data so that we can talk about this with data. We're sensitive to the issue that there are some stereotypes involved here and there's some misunderstandings that are involved. And a common perception is that if somebody has more than one EBT card in their possession, that it's criminal. Well, it isn't. I could have an EBT card and I'm going to the grocery store and I'm going to get some groceries for my friend too, who also has an EBT card. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, the system allows it. And so it's not categorically wrong to have it, But sometimes, as you've probably gotten stories and we've gotten stories, that somebody was in the grocery store and they saw somebody with two EBT cards, and the conclusion is that there must be some kind of fraud going on when there isn't. But sometimes there is, on the other hand. And so this reporting function doesn't criminalize anything. It doesn't change what's legal or illegal. It's just merely a requirement that when somebody is arrested for some crime, some other crime, and they happen to have more than one card in their possession, now there's going to be a common place for law enforcement to report that to. And then it'll come to the department, and we'll make sure it gets to the right county person to do an investigation so we can come to a conclusion. Was it fraudulent, or was it okay? And then next year, hopefully at this time, we can be talking about this and say, well, you know, this is how many cases were reported, and this is what the outcomes were of those investigations, so that we can kind of have the more accurate story of what's going on.
Representative Norton.
Yeah, thank you. I think that was a helpful explanation, that this is merely reporting. There won't be the person who was arrested, there will be no further action with them other than the reporting. And I appreciate that, and that there'll be data being brought forward. But could you just, for the record, is it possible that someone might have a legitimate reason for having two EBT cards? It sounds to me like I'm hearing that there might be times where there might be a legitimate or non-fraudulent reason for people to have more than one card.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, yes, there are multiple situations. One is, as like the case I mentioned, where I'm running some errands, and I may be running errands for my mother, and I'm going to use her card to buy her groceries. On the other hand, there are situations where people have both a cash benefit and the other benefit, and the food benefit, and they're on different cards. And so people might have two different cards because there's two different benefits. Those benefits get combined wherever possible, but, you know, we're going to be starting printing names on some of the cards as of July 1st, but not the other cards. And so it all gets very complicated, but the short answer is yes, there are many situations, and that's why it doesn't. There were some discussions early on about maybe those cards ought to be confiscated and provided to the department so we can sort it out. Well, no, that's jumping ahead way too far, because there are many scenarios where people could have multiple cards in their possession. Many that they shouldn't, though. So we'll hopefully sort that out.
And so, Mr. Chair, if I could
Representative Norton.
So it sounds like we are on a fact-finding mission, that this can be done in a non-punitive or finger-pointing mm-hmm. way at all, and that a year from now you will come back and share the reports. That's the intent of this bill, and that's it.
Mr. Chair and Representative Norton, I think that's the...
Mr. Kerber.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Next, Representative Grimhagen.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson, just for clarification purposes, my understanding is this is where law enforcement arrests somebody for another crime, and if they find on that person multiple EBT cards, they're simply notifying the Commissioner of Human Services to check to see if that person is eligible to have continued welfare benefits. So you first have to be breaking the law and arrested, and then, not that they're going to be going down the road just looking for people with multiple EBTs. This is where somebody breaks the law besides. Is that correct?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Grunhagen. That is correct.
And just one follow-up comment, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen.
You know, to the degree that we can eliminate fraud and waste in the system, I think people, poor people, should support something like this. Because if there's cards being used inappropriately, and we can catch that in the system, then we'll have more money for the people who actually need the benefit, okay? And I think that's the purpose of Representative Anderson's bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunhagen, thank you. Representative Lubley.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think it's, if the bill is just, as Representative Norton said, just for fact-finding, you know, I think it's not bad for us to be, you know, wanting to check and make sure and you know, and all of that. However, I want to say that I think the way the bill is written really does kind of begin to sound like that's not just what this is about. And let me point to a couple of things. One is the title. And I wanted to ask Representative Anderson, if, whether she writes the title, I don't know if that, maybe staff could tell me, you know, what that does for the bill. But the title here is Reporting Welfare Fraud. So if all this is doing is just a kind of a little survey to see whether there's fraud going on, that's not what the bill says in the title. Okay, it sounds like the operation of the bill is a little more innocuous than that. But secondly, when you get down to the bottom of the first page here, it says on the last two lines, on the first page it says, the Commissioner of Human Services shall use the report to assess the suspect's continued eligibility for welfare benefits. So I guess I have two questions. One is for the author. What about that title that sounds like something other than what the bill is really doing? And what about, then, for the department, what about that last sentence there? You know, how are you going to use the report to assess the suspect's continued eligibility for welfare benefits? I mean, that sounds like more is involved than just a little survey of what's going on when people have two cards.
Representative Anderson and then Mr. Kerber.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Liebling, this language was what was given to me from the folks, House Research, that provided this. This nonpartisan staff that put this legislation together. I had outlined the situation where the law enforcement official had experienced people that had been arrested in possession of more than one EBT card and had concerns about that. So I just gave them the kind of the lay of the land. They came up with this language, and that's how they printed it. Now, in the Public Safety Committee, I think it was Representative Sheldon Johnson had asked, you know, maybe we can work on the language. I said to him, I'm more than willing to work with him on that language. I even offered to say reporting potential welfare fraud. He was not amenable to that change. So as it stands, it's at where it's now. I offer you the same offer that I gave to him, and that we could change it to reporting potential welfare fraud and insert the word potential.
Mr. Kerber, do you want to comment briefly, and then we'll go back to Representative Liebling?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, on the second question there, I think one of the things that we must do when we get a report is make a determination about whether there is something wrong or not. And so that's where I talked about we'll get this information and we'll refer it out to the appropriate county investigator who will take a look at this and determine whether or not there's a problem here or not. In some cases, there certainly is fraudulent activity going on and we have mechanisms in place to deal with that. In other cases, there will be simply an affirmation that there's nothing wrong here. And so we have a process in place where those investigators have a 15-day turnaround time for completing those investigations. And so this isn't something that's going to drag on a long time. I mean, we'll make that referral. They'll check into it. A determination will be made. That will be recorded, and we'll move on. But there will be some kind of a determination made so that it isn't just an allegation hanging out there. I mean, we must come to a conclusion.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, okay, answering the second thing first, that sentence refers to the suspect's continued eligibility. And,
yeah.
You know, so I think we're, at the same time, we're talking about all we're doing is gathering facts. And, you know, it could be that somebody's lost their card and suddenly you found a card that somebody picked up on the street. That person arrested may not even be an EBT card. Maybe it is some kind of fraud, and they may not even be a person who's at all in the system because maybe they're not even eligible. So this line that the suspect's continued eligibility, I think, is pretty prejudicial here. It's assuming that what you're going to find is that a person who's got EBT benefits is defrauding the system. So I hear the testifier's concern. You know, this is perhaps a legitimate thing to do, but it comes with an overlay of stereotype that is objectionable, okay? So I think if we did this in a way that didn't do that, we might all be able to agree. So secondarily, responding to Representative Anderson, you know, even potential welfare fraud, that, again, is still doing the same thing here that I think we're objecting to. If what we want to do is simply collect data to see in what situations this is occurring. And, of course, if somebody's got cards that somehow flag a fraud, of course, I think everyone would agree that that needs to be followed up. But what about, Representative Anderson, something like collecting information on EBT use or something like that that's neutral? You know, that doesn't involve the word fraud, because nothing else in the bill here is really about fraud. And I just think it would, you know, it would just take a lot of pressure off of this. I don't think anybody probably in the room minds if there's information collected on whether this occurs and, you know, under what circumstances. But I just think that the way this bill is drafted, it's really, you know, unnecessarily provocative.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. You know, I think when you're talking about the word suspect, this is related to the public safety section of our statutes, and I'm wondering if that might be a situation where they use that term because it has a definition within those statutes, and that's why the researcher used that term. But I appreciate you bringing that issue up. I'll have a conversation with them to discuss that further to see what the intent of that was, and I appreciate your input and suggestions on the other items as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Kerber?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I might just add that the suspect, the term is used to as a descriptor of the person who was arrested, and they're not suspect because of the multiple cards. The person is a suspect because of that arrest for something else, and they happen to have the multiple cards. But if that word can be changed.
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks. And I did understand that, but it says the suspect's continued eligibility. So it's assuming that that suspect is, in fact, an EBT, you know, that they, in fact, are an eligible person when they might be out stealing other people's cards. So that's why I think, it feeds into this stereotype thing that people who are getting these benefits are somehow less honest than other people, and I think that's a really unfortunate thing here, and it's going to get in the way of what people are trying to do.
All right, Representative Quam, and before you ask your question, Representative Quam, I'll just remind the audience, you know, we're trying to do this in a respectful manner, and the rules of the hearing are that we don't have a lot of comments and talk coming in from the audience, so to speak. I mean, we're glad that you're here. You're welcome to observe and certainly to testify if you want at the testifying table, but let's keep the comments to a minimum in the audience. Okay, Representative Quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the discussion on the suspect. I was assuming that was referring the appropriate referral for a person that was under arrest, and the you know, thing that I'm glad what was made is this is not a primary offense. In fact, as this discussion goes on, I'd like clarification that there is no offense that is being delineated in this bill so that there would be no charge in regards to this, that it's just the data acquisition to, you know, help the department understand what possibly might be going on. And being a freshman, I'm used to being, you know, wondering why they refer to, you know, in such a fashion. And I guess I just was picking up that not eligible meant that when this was written, they were assuming that the person, you know, had a right to have, you know, the card or cards with, and so I didn't notice that. One of the things growing up in the country and, you know, small town, I'm used to people that, you know, will borrow somebody else's vehicle. So if they're going to pick up, you know, something large, they don't have a pickup, or we frequently will help out maybe a person that's not able to move due to injury or other condition, we will go ahead and help them run errands. And at times that means taking their vehicle and doing stuff. And I know more than once someone that was, you know, stopped it, and whether a taillight or whatever, and it came about that they were in possession of a vehicle that wasn't theirs, and they didn't take offense to that. But, you know, if you've got something that, you know, you question about. So I think the premise I'm not reading is with, you know, a harsh intent. I think it's there are some questions out there, and I really hope that this data will help us either, say, know there aren't any issues out there, or if there are, we can help alleviate those, because I don't want anyone preying upon people that have EBT cards, whether, you know, there's theft or, you know, anything else going on that decreases their benefit. And the reason why I look favorably on this bill is because I see it as a way of helping. And if we can, I'm sure Representative Anderson is amenable, as she said, to take away some unintended slights, maybe in the verbiage, as this was written in a very legal, clinical way. Sometimes that happens, but you know, I would hope that we can come together on this, maybe do some, you know, work on the language, but just agree that, you know, we're not causing an offense, we're actually trying to help out. But we need to know what is happening in order to do that. So I would say we should support this effort, and thank you.
Representative Ballant.
Mr. Chair, I have a comment first and then a question for the panel. Comment first is that, I mean, just to state the obvious, that it that this bill is offensive, it's demeaning, and it perpetuates a stereotype that welfare fraud is a widespread problem. And I just don't see the purpose or the clear purpose for this bill. It seems that you have on the very last provision, seems like this could be included somewhere in some other statute or some, or just even a form that the Commissioner of Human Services shall adopt reporting forms to be used by law enforcement agencies to make reports required under this section. That if it was purely a data collecting, that there would be some other, you wouldn't need a statute under, you wouldn't even need a statute. You could do this without a law. I mean, it seems like you collect data. I don't see that there's any report that this is a widespread problem or that. If that's the sole purpose, then if it is something about fraud, then is fraud defined here? I didn't miss that discussion. Is it you defined under the public safety statute or?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Allen, when you're looking at this legislation, what it does is it says that if someone is arrested for whatever the crime may be, and when the law enforcement officials check them in and they find in their possession more than one EBT card in their possession, then they do a report to the Department of Human Services. The language on the last part of the bill makes it so that way if they have continuity in the reporting forms, which makes it easier for the department, of course, to process these. And also it gives a tool to law enforcement agencies on knowing exactly what do they need to report. One of the things that the department had pointed out is that they want to be able to have the number on the card because that gives them an indication whether, you know, there's something that they need to look into or not look into. And so that's just all tools that will help the department in determining what's going on here, if this is something that we need to dig deeper or we know that this is okay and we're well and good. So it's just a helpful tool for the department to make sure that we're maintaining the program integrity and making sure that the precious resources that we have are going to a citizen that really need the help. As far as, what was the other item that you had pointed out? As far as having something in place in law, we do need it. We have I've received an email personally, and we received testimony during the Public Safety Committee that there are folks out there, law enforcement officers, that come across individuals that they arrest, and they find these multiple cards, and they wonder, why do they have multiple cards in their possession? It may be an okay thing. It may not be an okay thing. But they are looking for a resource to be able to send this information to the Department of Human Services. And no law enforcement agency currently has a predictable way of reporting this or even a way of reporting it. We've had some law enforcement officials that have told different members that they've given the information to their superior advisor, and that information hasn't gone to the Department of Human Services. So they're kind of frustrated with that piece of things, too. So the Department of Human Services has been looking forward to working with the different law enforcement officials to address this issue, and this piece of legislation will help to remove the silos that we have in government of communicating across different agencies and different entities.
Representative Allen?
Mr. Chair, it seems to me that we already have a system in place for you're talking about a bill of trying to protect vulnerable adults or families, children, so that the money is actually, the benefits are actually used by the individual that's entitled to receive the public assistance. And it seems to me that we already have statutes in place. We have Department of that you have social services, or you have that this can be reported independently. Whether you know if somebody their card is stolen, that they can report it. If there's abuse going on, or you know, elder abuse, or domestic, that's something that would be reported under. And so you're taking it out of the sort of a social, putting it into a public safety, a criminal type of investigation. And it's just not clear to me how this information is going to be used to determine their continued eligibility for welfare benefits. So you're going to have an investigation, and that there'll be additional resources that would have to be committed for that, and then you'll use that. So I want to know what the actual fraud is. Is that a criminal offense or civil? And what would be, give me an example of what actual fraud would be that would cause, that then you would take action to discontinue the welfare or the benefits.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair and Representative Allen, there were a number of questions in there. I think, starting at the beginning, where this is going to be helpful is that we're going to have some data that's going to be useful in addressing some of what the perceptions might be. I've certainly, in this capacity, I've come to understand that there are a lot of people who think there's a lot of welfare fraud, there's a lot of EBT card misuse, and I know that there are other people who think that it's very minimal, if any. This is going to be one little data source that's going to help us answer that question, at least as it relates to people who are arrested for some other crime. How often have they had multiple cards in their possession? And when they did, was there a problem with it? The mechanism we have in place for investigating any kind of allegation of possible EBT card fraud involves the counties. The Department of Human Services has contracts, has 25 different grant contracts with county agencies out there. And the 25 contracts that we have represent 74 different counties who have kind of gotten together and consolidated resources. And we issue these grants to the counties totaling about $3 million a year. And they have the obligation of investigating any kind of allegations that come up of this nature or child care assistance. And this would fall right into that mechanism that we already have in place. And so those people are out there to do these investigations. If we get a report in of this nature, and who knows how many we'll get, we'll either get a lot or we'll get few, or somewhere in between, we'll figure out from the number that's on the card, you know, where is the recipient supposed to be, the recipient of that benefit. And then we'll contact that county investigator to figure out, is there a problem with this? We have a report that there's three cards with these three different numbers were in the possession of this individual. Can you check into it and then get back to us with the results? If there is a finding that there's something wrong, if one of those cards is stolen or it was lost and was picked up by somebody else, there are mechanisms in place to deal with this. There are administrative actions, and then, of course, there's criminal actions. And so the administrative process is one that if somebody is somehow getting a benefit that they're not supposed to be getting, there's an investigation done, and the person is provided with a notice that they're getting a benefit that they ought not, and they have 10 days to appeal that decision, and they have a hearing right. And if they go through the hearing process, then there's a final decision that's made. If somebody is holding one of these cards fraudulently, well, then it gets referred to the county attorney, who would consider it for prosecution. And so those paths are already in existence, and this is just it's just going to provide some information to the department so that we can address some of these concerns that people have about, is there a lot, is there a little, and when we have these cases, how do they end up, is there actually so much fraud going on? We don't know. because there, as I mentioned, there are legitimate cases for people to have more than one card in their possession. And so it could be next year at this time I'll be talking with you about 47 cases. It was determined that a person had multiple cards in their possession, and it was this legitimate situation. 87, there were this many, and these were this of this particular legitimate thing. But maybe 43 of them, there were fraudulent activities underway. I'm hoping to be able to address that with some actual data next year.
Okay. Representative Allen, quickly, then we have Representative Moran. We have one additional testifier on this bill. We have two more bills to get through and 13 testifiers.
Okay.
So, Representative Allen.
Just quickly. There are those statutes that say data collection, data reporting. Don't think it's necessary to term this reporting welfare fraud. Do we even use the term welfare? I don't think welfare even doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, we talk about helping people to find jobs, job opportunity. That term, I don't know that. If I'd have to look at the statute, see if it's even defined anywhere, or if it's even a term we even use anymore. It's to me, it's demeaning. So that's my last.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the same bill came through Public Safety, which is also a committee that I sit on, with some of the same concerns came through that committee. So I have two questions, and the first one is to the department, which is one of the questions I asked in Public Safety. I heard the department say that there would be a 15-day investigation. So my concern is that the person who is carrying the card may be a relative, maybe a PCA, may have had permission to carry the card. And so my concern is whether or not the person who's the owner of the car will be penalized or will be, prevented from using the car within that 15-day investigation. Can you bring some clarity to that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Moran,
Cooper, briefly.
If there hasn't been a violation by the cardholder, by the recipient of the benefit, then there wouldn't be any consequences for the recipient.
Mr. Chair, between the 15-day of investigation, will they still have the ability to utilize their card?
Mr. Cooper.
Mr. Chair and Representative Moran, yes.
Okay, thank you. My second question is to Representative Anderson. In looking at the title of this bill, which is truly misleading, because I think within the bill itself, we are making an assumption that the person who has been stopped and arrested is on public assistance. We're making an assumption there. There's no way that, just because they have been arrested does not mean that they are receiving public assistance. So in that case, it's really misleading to say you are reporting welfare fraud when, he can be a citizen who has two or three jobs. So I don't see how the two are really correlating and going together.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Moran. I'm going to work with Representative Liebling. She had made some suggestions, and we'll hammer out some of those issues later on, but I did want to spend some time talking to the Public Safety House researcher on this, on some of the language. I think that some of it might be required just to follow within their statute language, but I want to verify that with them first, but I appreciate the input that you've given.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good. We have another testifier. Sir, if you could introduce yourself for the record and
yes.
Proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Daryl Paulson.
Welcome.
I'm a disability advocate. At first glance, I look at this bill and I say, yeah, what does it hurt? It doesn't hurt anybody. We're just collecting some data. And we're going to use that data to hopefully benefit us and save us some money down the road. Well, I may be in support of this bill later on, but as it is right now, I'm opposed to it. The reason why is because if you have a primary card holder, they have their name on it, and now they know that they're not allowed to use it in tobacco shops or liquor stores. But the secondary card does not have the name on it, does not have any other identifying marks on it. Okay? If you use that secondary card, and we have no way of tracking that data. So if we're going to issue a secondary card, that secondary card should be the same as the primary card. It should have the name on it, should have the picture on it, if that's what we do in the future. But at that same time, you're going to eliminate people like myself, people with severe disabilities, from being able to allow their PCAs to use it, their mother, any family member, any friend down the street. So I'm very opposed to this bill, and before this bill comes before you for a vote, it definitely needs a lot of work. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Paulson. Mr. Kerber, briefly, is that in fact what this bill would do?
Mr. Chair, it doesn't change any penalties for anything. It merely provides the information so the situation can be investigated. And as the testifier mentioned, it certainly is the case where a person might have multiple cards. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to start putting the name of an individual on the cash card beginning July 1st. The food card, if they have two different cards, will not have the name on, and my understanding of that is related to this, is because the federal requirement under the SNAP program is that members of that household must be able to use that benefit. The members of the household must be able to use that card to make purchases of groceries. And so if it has a name of an individual, the recipient on it, one of the issues is if a person who's using that card may run into some difficulty. And so, you know, there may be many, many legitimate reasons for a person to have more than one card. And this isn't criminalizing those people. It's merely providing an avenue to make a report to somebody who can determine, is it a problem or not a problem?
Thank you.
But Mr. Gerber, wouldn't your data essentially be skewed that
Mr. Paulson,
the secondary card doesn't have that ID, name on it, so your data wouldn't be accurate if somebody was using the secondary card?
Mr. Kerber, briefly.
Mr. Chair, to the witness's question, the number on the card is really where we're going to be, you know, we're going to be following up the number on the card to make a determination about who is that card issued to, who is the recipient of that benefit, and is it legitimate for that person who's possessing that card to be possessing that card. And so it doesn't categorically make any determinations. This is information that will be investigated so that we can make that call.
Okay, members, I would remind you, we intend to vote on all three bills today. I mentioned at the outset we're going to be fair and offer equal opportunity on both sides of this. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to either the author or to Mr. Kerber, who's going to educate the police officers about all of these cards so that people who are arrested with a card aren't unintentionally harassed because they don't understand the difference between now all these cards that you've just described?
Mr. Kerber.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy, we'll certainly be providing some information to law enforcement agencies. I think from what we understand and as indicated by Representative Anderson, law enforcement agencies are dealing with these cards now. When they're arresting people, oftentimes we're told, don't know the numbers, but oftentimes we're told they do have multiple cards in their possession. And the EBT cards are distinguishable from other cards. And so some will have people's names on, some won't, but they essentially, is my understanding, they're going to look about the same. But we certainly will be providing information to law enforcement agencies about this. If this passes, we'll be providing information to them, as well as some forms that they can use to make these reports. And what we're hoping to be able to do is to do this online and make it simplified.
Representative Norton.
Yeah, quickly, and thank you, Mr. Chair. As we were talking, I was getting the impression that this was going to be a report back to us so we would learn what's happening, and also that this was kind of a trial thing. And as I'm looking this over again, I don't see a report date back to the legislature so we can decide if this additional responsibility is useful, and I guess I would appreciate a sunset. If it's not useful, we should stop doing it because it's an extra thing for folks to be able to do. And on the other hand, if we find out there is a lot of fraud, then it might well be something we want to continue. But at least the early discussion I was hearing, this was kind of a, we're going to try it and get a report back here. I don't see that written in here, so I'm looking for clarification, please.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Norton. I hadn't looked at this as being something that would be sunset or that it would be a report back to the legislature. I looked at it at this as being a tool to the Department of Human Services in perpetuity to look at this issue to determine anybody that has in their possession multiple EBT cards, that they have an opportunity to check in to see whether or not fraud has been committed. And so it was not my intent, continues not to be my intent to report to the legislature. However, you as the department, as a Health and Human Services a policy committee, that doesn't stop you from asking for a report from the department on this year, on this issue a year from now.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I could
Representative
follow.
Norton.
I appreciate the fact that there needs to be a mechanism if someone is stealing cards from individuals through coercion and has a whole bunch of them in their pocket. I certainly want that to stop. But I think there's more to this than that. I think there are other implications about the people using it. I think we need to use caution. And frankly, if we are going to start collecting data, as a legislator who's going to be voting on this, I want to know if it's making a difference or if there are outcomes. So I would just encourage you at some point, if you are going to collect this data, data collection costs. It will be extra work for the police and extra work for the department, and I don't see a fiscal note, and my guess is there magically won't be one, and that's fine. But I want to know the results, and I'm hoping that we can, if it's not written in the bill, that we can at least get a head nod from the department that at some point they would come back and report to us their findings, because this event today and the next bills we're going to hear raise the ire of people in our state on both sides of the aisle, quite frankly, because there's an implication that there's rampant fraud. And I'm afraid when the reports come back, there won't be the headline saying, guess what, we didn't find that much, or that the kind of fraud that we're seeing isn't the kind people think. And so I just think by hearing this today, we're setting up thoughts in people's mind and ideas that maybe aren't completely true, and I would like to be clear if whether they are or aren't at the end of some time period.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Members, I'm going to renew my motion that Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to, I spoke to Representative Anderson there for a moment. There are some drafting problems in this bill as it is, and I just wanted to put on the record that I'm going to support this today, but I have the same concerns as have been expressed, but I think they can be fixed, and I take Representative Anderson at her word that she's going to work with me and others to try to fix some of this language. I mean, some of the errors in the bill are just more obvious ones, but others, I think we can make this a little more neutral and less provocative and actually do what we're talking about here. So I just want to make that statement, although I'm not going to make an oral motion right now because we did discuss it. I'm going to support it as is, and we're going to fix it as we go along.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. With that, I will renew my motion that Representative Anderson's bill, House File 1956, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. And the bill is moved on to the General Register. Representative Anderson, thank you. And thank you to the testifiers. Representative Doubt, as you're coming up, I'll make the motion that Representative Doubt's House File 2081 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance. Representative Doubt, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Obviously, I'm here for House File 2081, and I would like, if you would, to get the bill in the order that I would like it, if someone could offer the A1-1 amendment to House File 2081, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll move the A1-1 amendment. I think everybody has that. Representative Doubt, to your author's amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill originally obviously originates from some changes that we made last year that did become law. The amendment will add some language to the bill that will basically, I think, make the statutes consistent on allowing the department to enforce, enforce what we did last year with disqualifying somebody if they're misusing the card for purchases of alcohol or tobacco. So that is what section, I might as well walk through the sections here. So section 2 does that. Section 3 limits the EBT use to Minnesota and the surrounding four states for the cash portion of that benefits that are issued on the EBT cards. And then Section 4 is that language that I talked about as well, with the making it compliant and with other parts of statute, and this was brought by the department for what they thought would make it easier for them to enforce the language that we put in last year. Section 5 is some new language that would make it basically unlawful to sell or exchange, barter the EBT cards. I have had ongoing discussions with the department, so in an effort to move the debate along here in an orderly fashion and in a timely fashion, we actually may be removing this language. After we had this amendment drafted, we found that it may not be needed, but I think the appropriate place for that to happen, this bill actually is headed to
Judiciary.
Judiciary. Yep. And I think that's probably the appropriate place to deal with those penalties. So if it would be okay, we'll check and see whether this language is needed or not. If what we believe is true, that it's not needed, we can pull it out there. So that is the amendment.
Okay, members, we have the A1-1 amendment before us. Questions? Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author of the bill, Representative Doubt. Can you tell me what... already a prohibited purchase is contained in our statutes for alcohol and tobacco. Can you tell me what the current process is for an individual who does violate that by chance?
Representative Doubt.
It's my understanding that what's most likely going to happen is a retailer would report that to the department, and then the department would... And maybe the department can come down and speak to this as well. I know they're here. The department would then typically probably look at a duplicate receipt that would show the card number and the purchase that was made, and then the person would be disqualified from the benefits.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dowd, I want to know more specifically what happens now. Do you know what happens now when somebody makes that purchase?
Well, the language that we put forth last session has not been enacted into law yet. I think that date is June 1st of this year. But maybe, Mr. Chairman, somebody from the department can answer that better than I can.
Mr. Kerber is here. Mr. Kerber, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services, and I'm sorry I didn't hear the question.
Perhaps you could repeat it. Representative Vosh.
Well, and more specifically, I'm just trying to understand what the impetus for this bill is and the penalties within this. Right now, under the current law, tobacco and alcohol is a prohibited purchase. Says that individual is also under the disqualification under 256.98 subdivision 8. What is the current penalty now for somebody who doesn't, and why do you need to have a permanent disqualification in it, as you propose? And this is to the author.
Mr. Chairman, I think I can answer that question.
Representative Doubt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hosh. The penalty right now is the same. It's permanent disqualification. However, the language was brought to me by the department because they were unsure if they would be able to enforce that in the proper way. So we're just trying to make the statute consistent with the bill that we passed last year and making sure that they've got the mechanism to enforce that.
Representative Hosh, we'll maybe go one more round here. Traditionally, we put the author's amendment on and then we debate it, okay?
Well,
but go ahead.
We would have to have a vote to put the author's amendment on. I'm trying to figure out correct. If I can vote for that or not.
Proceed okay. with your question.
Currently, under the bill and the statute that's referenced in the current language, the penalty is 1 year of disqualification for the first offense. There's already a penalty in place. You are significantly expanding it where you're making a person a criminal and permanently disqualifying them. And remember that 62% of the people who are on the Minnesota Family Investment Program are children. 62% are children. So what you are doing is permanently disqualifying a family in which children are the primary beneficiaries for a purchase, where we already have under current law, and this is under 256.98 subdivision 8, it's within your bill, 1 year qualification first offense, 2 year qualification second offense, permanent after that. And I think that's sufficient, Mr. Chair. I think we need to understand that we already have protections in place under our laws. We already have prohibited purchases under our current law. This greatly expands it. And I want to also focus on Section 5, because this Section 5 is prohibited transfers. And I want to give you a real-life situation. And this is one that I've just dealt with within this calendar year. I have an individual that I work with who luckily was able to get a temporary job placed through ProStaff, which is a temporary agency. This is a disabled individual. He worked for a while. The job then ceased to exist. He did everything right and reported his income to the county and reported his income to Social Security. He had his food portion then reduced the following month. However, he didn't have the job anymore because the job was a temporary job. This person needed help with the food, and a neighbor of his was kind enough in a Minnesota tradition to say, you know what, I can help you out a little bit and use my benefits. You're making that person under this bill a criminal and would permanently disqualify them. Is that your intention?
Representative Doubt.
So the neighbor is using benefits that they need for themselves to purchase groceries for their neighbor? Yes, I guess I am disqualifying them from that. The intent is that these benefits are for the people who they're issued to, because they've asked for them and they've been issued these benefits because they need them. And really what I'm trying to do is protect the benefits for the people that need them. I will remind the chair and the committee that likely that Section 5 is coming out of the bill at the next committee, because I think that it's not needed. But if you want to continue to talk about that, we certainly can.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Dalt, I have to say I'm disappointed in that answer. I think, and again, this person is a person who is has multiple disabilities, has done everything right, has done everything to try to find a job, has done everything to report any income, temporary as it may be, to the system. The way the system is set up, he had a significant reduction in benefits, and there's no criminal activity or malfeasance being done by this individual or the neighbor. And these stories are common throughout Minnesota. These are not criminals. And it seems like we're legislating oftentimes to stereotypes and to myths. Our programs have a lot of protections in them. I can go through them until this hearing is completely over, but Section 5 would severely impact on people who need the help, who have disabilities, who are doing things right. It is not needed. And then when you have Sections 2 and Sections 3 and Sections 4 within your author's amendment, and there's not even an understanding that there's current penalties in place right now that are referenced within the DE amendment already. It's unbelievable that we already have these penalties in place and we are moving towards permanent disqualification that is affecting a family in which the primary beneficiaries are children. That is the reality of our programs. And I hope that we as a committee, as a Health and Human Services Reform Committee, become more versed on how these programs are used, how they're implemented, and what's currently in place, because this is absolutely unneeded.
All right, members, we're going to vote on the A1-1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Representative Doubt, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill as amended, as I mentioned, the original portion of the bill prior to amendment was originally came to me as language from the department to clarify the bill that we passed last year. Originally, what we had thought was that by issuing and maybe I'll back up. There's two different benefits that are paid, more than two different. Let me generalize them as state benefits and federal benefits. The federal benefits, we were under the impression that we could not put the user's name on the card. because they needed to be, and you heard a little bit of this testimony in your last bill, that they needed to be able to be transferred from one user to another within the household. So in those instances, that is true. We cannot put the name on the card for the other users in the household. But in instances where, so what we had done last year was basically we were going to issue two separate cards, one for federal benefits without the name on it, one for state benefits with the name. After the department basically worked through the implementation of the language we passed last year, they realized, I think with also checking with the feds on this, that in an instance where we have just a single person without other members of the household, we can issue the state benefits and the federal benefits on the same card as we do now, but we would be able to add the name to that card. So basically that's what we're allowing the department to do with the bill. And then, of course, the language that I already talked about that we've amended on to it now as well.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My comment was probably prior to the vote, but I think it's relevant here since we've adopted this portion. And I guess I'm looking at this. I've supported most of these EPD card changes over the course of my time here at the legislature. But I have to tell you, as looking at this and looking at the permanent disqualification, a year is tough. But we're talking, there are people who break laws. There are. They're in all sectors of life, all across the board. But what we're doing here today is going to affect the children in these families. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, so we just had a hearing in here about vulnerable adults last time we sat here. Are we now going to automatically, if someone does something and is permanently disqualified and these children can't get the proper food and care and nutrition and help that they need and they're not living in conditions because the family, an adult has made an error, let's say that happens, the children are the ones that are punished. And then are we going to put them in our vulnerable adult system because we have just penalized them from getting the help they need? And I know there's not an easy answer to this, but to permanently keep a family from being able to care for their children just seems inhumane to me. And so a year is a hard penalty. I don't know how a family feeds or cares for a child for a year, but permanent disqualification just seems way over the top to me. And not because I'm sympathetic with the adult that might have made a violation, but because of these vulnerable children that are in a home that need proper care. So I would just say, Representative Dowd, I know what you're trying to do. I appreciate we don't want fraud in the system. I get all that. But these are our Minnesota. These are our children in the state of Minnesota, and we can't just turn our back to them. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to support this today because of some of the language in sections 4 and 5. I'm fine with, you know, some of the changes you're making in the other sections. And I guess I'm holding out hope that between now and when this comes to the floor that you really have thought through some of this and worked this out so we aren't doing permanent damage to families and children in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Moran.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dalt, can you tell me, can you help explain to me why you brought this bill to this committee?
Representative Dowd.
Your question is why did this bill come to this committee?
Yes.
I guess that might be a question for the chairman. I'm not certain. I assume this committee was the appropriate place.
Why did you author this bill?
Well, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
To answer briefly why it's here, it's health and human, it's a health and human services issue. The EBT program falls under that. So, but I think your question, Representative Moran,
why did you author the bill?
Representative Dowd.
Certainly. As I stated, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Moran. As I stated earlier, the language in this bill, with the exception of the restriction to the other states, and then that Section 5, which I believe will ultimately not end up in this bill, was brought to me by the department as clarification language on the law that we passed last year. And to the previous question as well, the one-time losing the benefits for life for, remember, this is for purposes of or purchases of alcohol and tobacco products with the card. This is a bill we passed last year, and that was the penalty in that bill last year. This is simply just clarification language. So it was a one strike and you're out penalty last year when we passed this, when the governor signed it into law, and we're just clarifying that language as in other places in statute now.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Moran.
So it's my understanding that the department brought this to you as a concern, and you thought it was worth authoring.
That's correct. Representative Dell.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Moran.
Representative Dell, can you tell me about Section 3? Why is only certain states, EBT use restricted to certain states? Why is that?
Representative Dell.
This section comes out of the bill that I carried last year. That particular section had been negotiated last year and really agreed upon and then didn't end up in the final bill that was negotiated during special session. For whatever reason, I'm not sure. The purpose behind that is the same purpose that I wanted to put the names on the cards. And as you probably know, there is no penalty in law for using an EBT card that doesn't have your name on it. You certainly can give the card to a neighbor or a friend to go and use the card on your behalf. The purpose that I put the name on the card and the same purpose for this is that we want to deter people from using the card for an unintended purpose. And it's simply a deterrent. Having the name on the card, if you're standing in a Cub Foods parking lot and somebody wants to sell you an EBT card, if it has a name on it and it's not your name, you're less likely to buy the card. And on this one, I know there was a study that was done back in 2007 or 2008 about all of the EBT use outside of the state of Minnesota. So what we're trying to do is just basically deter people from mailing these cards to a cousin in Toledo, Ohio, when the benefits really are needed here in Minnesota.
Representative Moran.
Mr. Chair, so the benefits are needed here in Minnesota, as you just stated. So why do certain states have favor of using our Minnesota cards in their states?
Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moran, and I apologize, maybe I misunderstood your question. Basically, this was language that we talked about with the department originally, and I have another bill, but we've decided just to amend it here because the department was favorable of the language. My original bill said that we'd only use it in the state of Minnesota, simply because I believe that if the benefits are needed here and we have business owners that really, you know, these cards are used in these businesses, I'd prefer if those tax dollars were being spent in Minnesota businesses. But the department felt that for people that live in bordering, border communities, maybe East Grand Forks, that they would travel to Grand Forks to buy clothing or food or those kinds of necessities that really these benefits are designed for. So we wanted to give an allowance for people that live on the borders to use them across the border if it's easier and makes more sense for them.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Maroon.
Representative Daltz, I believe that if we need the revenue here in the state of Minnesota, we need the revenue here in the state of Minnesota, and not because people are living on the border around the state of Minnesota that we're paying favoritism to certain states and not others because, you know, maybe those people are using those cards for the same purposes as you stated for someone transfer or mailing it to another state. I don't know. Maybe they're doing the same thing in those bordering states. So I think from my point of view, if we're going to say that the funds are needed here in the state of Minnesota, then that's what we need to do.
Representative Dell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moran. And I appreciate that comment. And that was my original intent. And here, I guess you caught me trying to be reasonable, and we negotiated this out, and you know, if you and I would like to talk afterwards and offline about this, you know, I'm certainly willing to return to just the Minnesota language, but you know, I wanted to be reasonable. If the people that lived in Minnesota that needed the benefit, if it was easier for them to use it in Grand Forks or Hudson, Wisconsin, I wanted to make that allowance. So I was trying to be reasonable, but thank you for the question.
And Mr. Chair, one last statement. Yes, I would like to have a conversation with you and the department.
Yeah. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, I'll pass. Thank you.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is for the department, and because I'm just, I guess, a little perplexed, and I don't know who from the department, but under the DE amendment, if you look under 1.11, 1.12, we are striking the reference to Section 256.98, Subdivision 8. That is the part of statute that stipulates the penalties for somebody who makes a prohibited purchase. Was it the department's statute to move away from that sliding or that progressive penalty to a permanent disqualification on the first purchase? because that's what this amendment does.
Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your response.
Thank you, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
To the
Mark,
committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark Toogood from the Department of Human Services. And I'm sorry, I lost track of the question on my way up here. Could it be repeated?
Yeah. Representative Hosh.
The DE amendment on lines 1.12, it strikes the reference to section 256.98, subdivision 8. That is the part of statute that says for the first offense, you have a one-year disqualification, second offense is 2 years, and third offense, it's a permanent disqualification. Within that, you strike that part, and then you reference subdivision 4 within the amendment. Subdivision 4 immediately goes to a permanent disqualification. Was it the department's intent to do that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hosh, the department did not take a position on this language. It was the sponsor's language.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hosh.
That's all I wanted to hear.
Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hosh, just to be clear, as I stated a couple of times already, the bill that we passed last year was a permanent disqualification for these two instances, and we're simply making the language from the bill we passed last year consistent with other areas in statute. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Right, members, we're going to take a vote on this bill, and we have a second bill or another bill from Representative Dowd. We have 13 testifiers lined up for that. We need to be out of here by a quarter after in order to get onto the floor for a floor session. So I will renew my motion that House File 2081, Representative Dowd's bill, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is passed and moved on to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee. Representative Dowd, to your second bill, House File 2080. I will move that House File 2080 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Public Safety and Crime Prevention Policy and Finance. Representative Dowd, to your bill. I understand you have a DE1 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask that someone would move the DE1 amendment so we can get the bill in the shape that I would like it in.
Okay, I will move the DE1 amendment. Discussion? Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion prevails, and the DE1 amendment is adopted. To your bill as amended, Representative Dowd.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try to make this brief because I know we have a lot of people that want to testify, and I don't want to certainly limit their time. This bill basically takes the lifetime welfare benefits from 60 months down to 30 months. This only is for new applicants from the date they apply, as long as it's after enactment of this bill, from the date they apply moving forward. We're not going after people who are currently on the program. So the first person that would be affected by this would be... What did I say? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. It's 36 months, not 30 months. So we're taking it from 60 months down to 36 months. My apologies. So the first person that would be affected by this would be the first applicant, and they'd be affected 36 months after date of enactment. So we're giving everybody a lot of notice that we're doing this. We also have disqualification for people who have drug convictions in the previous 10 years. And then to go along with that, a background check that would indicate whether there has been a drug conviction or not. We also are taking the disqualification from 7 sanctions down to 3 sanctions before someone's disqualified. And then we're restricting, again, as we did in the last bill, restricting the use of the EBT cards to Minnesota and the surrounding states. And then lastly, we're reducing the MFIP exit from 115% of poverty to 100% of poverty. So that's the bill in a nutshell.
Very good. We have testifiers. I'd like to move to testimony if we can, members. And our first person is Rhonda Otteson. In fact, if you have signed up to testify, if you could kind of begin lining up, that would be good. That will help us move along efficiently and make good use of the time.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Murphy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question while the testifier is coming up for Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy. Doubt, do you know the position, do you know what the governor's position on this bill is?
I don't know.
Representative Doubt. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair and Representative Doubt, have you talked to the governor about this before?
I will be reaching out to him, but I have not yet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Ms. Otteson, if you could state your name for the record, who you represent, then proceed with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Rhonda Otteson, Heartland Community Action Agency. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing my testimony today. My name is Rhonda Otteson. I am the Housing Services Manager at Heartland Community Action Agency. Heartland is a nonprofit organization serving low-income people in southwest Minnesota. Each month, an average of 200 households facing homelessness or eviction seek our services across our four counties. Of those households, about half the people affected are children. With the poor economic conditions over the last few years, we have seen increased need in rural communities we serve. Large employers such as Hutchinson Technologies have laid off hundreds of workers, and the construction trade is down. This is a time to ensure that a safety net for our most vulnerable children continues to operate intact. Children do not have control of their parents' jobs or economic conditions. They just have to live with their impact. In December, I met with a young mother of two children under the age of six. I'll call her Carrie. Carrie was referred by a local faith-based nonprofit. Carrie's income was very low, just MFIP of $532 per month. With her rent at $475, Carrie struggled to pay for gas to drive to the workforce center for her job search activities, car insurance, basic toiletries, warm winter clothing, and utilities. She just couldn't stretch that $532 any further. She had fallen 2 months behind in her rent. Carrie had landed in the MFIP program after she lost her job. She had been reprimanded for calling the ambulance for a customer that fell down and was injured while she was working at a convenience store. I'd say that's customer service. Carrie thought that the employer was concerned for the liability expense and didn't schedule her for future shifts, despite her dependability and work ethic. For Carrie and many others, the Minnesota Family Investment Program is a last resort. As a service provider, I fear that restrictions and cuts to the MFIP program will land more families with children on our doorstep. We have limited funding to meet our needs, the needs of the people already seeking our services. Homelessness costs our communities in many ways, and ripple effects occur. We are Minnesota. We can do better. So what happened for Carrie? Last time I spoke to her, she had interviewed for a job with a reputable local company. Her words stick in my mind from our last meeting. I just want to get a job so I can support my family without assistance. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Otteson. I would ask testifiers, because of the number of people we have and our time frame, we are going to vote on this bill at a quarter after, to try to keep your comments down to 2 minutes. You were perfect. Thank you. Next up, we have Jessica Webster. Jessica, welcome to the committee. You can state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with the Legal Services Advocacy Project. Legal Aid has a lot of concerns with this bill. I'm going to boil it down to just one. And, you know, first, I really should I should thank Representative Doubt, because I did meet with him earlier this week, and I know that he's willing to listen to advocates' concerns. So I hope that you see who's in the room here today, and you will take our calls and our meetings as you work on this bill. My one concern with this bill is that every single provision in this bill is going to result in more child homelessness and child hunger. And I can say that, I'm not trying to be dramatic, I can say that with confidence, because we know that 7 out of 10 people on this program are children. So every time we try to bring the hammer down on a parent, you're bringing the hammer down on the two children standing at that parent's feet. And so as we talk about this, we just can't talk about the parents. We have to also talk about the children. And with that, I'd like to cede the remainder of my time to Professor Joe Soss, who I think has more expertise on some of these issues than I do. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Webster. Joe Soss is up next. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Joe Soss. I'm the Coles Professor for the Study of Public Service at the Hubert H. Humphrey School of Public Affairs at the University of Minnesota.
Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me. As a public policy idea, the proposal to ban welfare applicants with prior drug offenses is a very bad idea. All the available evidence we have today suggests that rates of drug usage among welfare claimants and welfare recipients is extremely low, in the very low single digits. The proposal is an expensive solution to what is really a non-existent problem, and it deals with the expenses of its solution by shifting the costs, onto the poorest and most disadvantaged Minnesotans, who are asked to pay up front for background checks and fingerprinting procedures. In addition to stigmatizing welfare applications with an air of criminal suspicion, this fee operates as a kind of poll tax, in a sense, forcing people to be able to afford to apply for welfare, even if only temporarily, before they are reimbursed. For both these reasons, the proposal is a deterrent to families in need. And this, I would suggest, a very grave problem in an era when program rules, which are very strong already, have already driven the percentage of eligible families receiving aid down below the 50% level, and at a time when the last time our poverty rate was this high or higher was 1965. This proposal, I would argue, actually places us in a position where we'll be working at cross purposes with ourselves in the criminal justice area as well. There's a growing consensus among policy researchers and on both sides of the aisle that we need more supports and social services for people who are re-entering their communities from prisons, and those supports and services are in this case being stripped away on the welfare side, further destabilizing families and communities that already bear the costs of people being taken away to prison and then brought back, oftentimes with more problems than they left with. As a matter of fact, the most recent research that's been done by some of the leading experts in the field of criminal justice suggests, and I want to emphasize this, that states that have imposed drug bans and welfare programs of the kind that's being proposed have experienced in the years that followed an increase in criminal behavior and arrest rates among poor women as a result of the fact that those women were denied the kind of supports that would have given them other options. The second proposal I would like to speak briefly on is the proposal to strengthen the sanctions.
Mr. Suss, just in the interest of being fair to all the testifiers, how much more?
2 points.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Number one, all the evidence we have is that strong sanctions have negative effects on the material hardships that families endure, on earnings, and on levels of civic engagement. Second of all, there is strong evidence that sanctions around the country are implemented in a manner that is subject to a great number of racial biases and also to a great number of factors that have to do with the characteristics of implementing organizations and differences across communities. In other words, factors that have had nothing to do with the behavior of the individual. To approach sanctions as if we are talking simply about a consequence for personal behavior and a violation of the rules is to misunderstand what sanctions are and how they work in practice.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Catherine Wagoner. Catherine, if you could come to the testifying table. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record, who you represent, and then proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Catherine Wagoner. I'm from the Affirmative Options Coalition. We include 50 nonprofit and faith-based organizations, many of which deliver MFIP services to low-income Minnesotans. I asked an MFIP participant to come with me today, but she could not get the time off work. So in her place, I've asked Amanda Kunjbihari, her MFIP employment counselor, to tell the woman's story.
Very good. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
If you could state your name for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Amanda Kunjbihari, and I'm an employment counselor with Employment Action Center. I'm here on behalf of my client, Kelly. I have had the pleasure of working with Kelly for approximately 2 years in the capacity of a client-counselor relationship. Kelly is a very hardworking and dedicated mother of two. She is currently working 30 hours per week, making $8.50 an hour. She is also in pursuit of going to school part-time to further her degree. Kelly would dramatically be affected by the implementation of Proposal Bill HF 2080 Section 3. Because her household income is about 105% of the federal poverty guideline, she would lose financial support of having a food income as well as lose her child care assistance. If child care assistance was not available, Kelly would be unable to pursue her goal of completing her degree. She would also be unable to be a higher age work earner as well as to enter a skilled and competitive workforce because she's unable to go to school.
Kelly would also lose a great deal of professional support and that she is able to get when working with Employment Action Center. By enacting this bill, Kelly would be forced to quit school because of the overbearing child care expenses that she would have to pay out of pocket. She would also be subject to continue working in a job where job enhancement is very minimal, and she would have a very slim chance of having the opportunity to live out of poverty. I hope that you guys vote no in pursuit of this bill, and thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Angel Berkner is next, and then after her, Deb, I apologize if I mispronounce this, Konichny. I got it. Good job, huh? Angel, welcome to the committee.
Please state
your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Angel Buechner, and I'm with the Minnesota Coalition with Welfare Rights and the Minnesota Coalition for People's Bailout. But I'm also a former welfare recipient. We are here to speak against House File 2080. It comes from a place of criminalizing poor families. It doesn't make financial sense, and it is just a vehicle to demonize and humiliate people. Finally, like other bills of this sort, it shows either an ignorance of or a bullying disregard for the realities of living in extreme poverty. To start with a reality check on the MFIP grant for impoverished families with children, for a family of three, the cash MFIP grant is $532 per month. That is 60% below the poverty level. You try to find an apartment that will take a family of three with that kind of money. The infant grant hasn't seen an increase since 1986, 26 years ago. On the 36-month lifetime limit, while we are in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, you are poised to gut critical social programs that families rely on to get them through an economic crisis. Everyone knows that during these times, there's a massive unemployment and tens of thousands of people with even degrees and high-level skills are having difficulty finding jobs. MFIP parents are generally the last hired at a workplace, which means they are the first fired, or we have been working temp jobs. This means that many MFIP parents don't have enough work quarters in the right time period to qualify for unemployment insurance. Welfare is the unemployment assistance for a family.
If I could stop you for just a minute. It looks like you're reading this entire document, and we won't have time for that. Could you maybe hit the high points, and then everybody
yeah,
receiving
so,
a copy
basically
of this?
Basically, the 36-month time limit is just, I think, you know, after having it at 5 years, I mean, it's hard enough to get out of poverty in 5 years. Imagine gutting it down to 3 years. We're also against the background check. This part of the bill is outright criminalization of the poor. We want to be consistent. You would have to, you know, for everyone who gets a government money should probably have to get background checks, job Z's recipients, weatherization recipients, any person that has enjoyed the past 10 years of tax breaks, corporations, and the list goes on. And that could even include legislators. From a pure financial viewpoint, this bill is ridiculous. This bill makes people pay for a background check. How much does that cost? But then there is the staff, the time to administer, and the follow-up on every test at every year for every adult on assistance. The state or the county then eats the cost up for that check.
Okay.
So, and then also on the sanctions. We are against the changes to the MFIP sanctions, throwing our families completely off welfare with 100% sanctions if we slip up in paperwork or jumping through other hoops. Politicians and corporations break the rules all the time, but they continue to hold public office and get public money. And I think, we deserve a break, you know.
Okay,
the exit level.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up because
okay,
we have
this is
many
the end of it. As far as the exit level, like you heard on the past one, you know, a few little dollars if we're, you know, making $8 or $7.50 an hour, you know, and dropping that exit level could mean crucial times for families in poverty. And so I just urge people in the legislature to vote no on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And again, the Welfare Rights Committee has a handout that has been passed out to all committee members. Deb Konichny.
My name is Deb Knitschny. I'm a member of the Coalition for the People's Bailout. And all of these bills that are being proposed take away the lifeline for poor families. And for what? The amount of money that goes to MFIP for families, women primarily and children, is less than 0.5% of the state budget. That's what these are all about. 0.5%. We are so sick and tired of those of you who promote these poor bashing bills, playing games with people's lives for your own political gain. We are sick and tired of you using the good people of our state as sound bites because you think you can win votes by beating down the mother who is trying to raise her children the best way she can in an economic crisis and deep poverty. We are in a severe crisis. Tens of thousands are out of work or looking for work. Who in their right mind would consider throwing families off income assistance at this time? There are just not enough jobs to go around. On top of that, you want to spend precious state money to do background checks and look for offenses in the past 10 years. This is another version of the drug testing of welfare recipients that was imposed in Florida, and everyone knows what went down. 98% passed those tests, leaving the state with over $170 million in costs for the drug testing and only a minor, minuscule amount of savings. This is criminalizing of the poor. If you think that you're going to get political capital or ramp up your voting machine by passing this poor-bashing legislation, or get the voting machine going for your re-election by beating up on mothers and their children in poverty, I challenge you to think again. If you think you can continue to scapegoat and criminalize poor people while you openly let the rich get by without paying a dime for the crisis they created, you really need to think again. Every one of you has constituents that are unemployed, facing unemployment, or scared about how long their job might last, or losing their homes to foreclosure. What is your solution? Are you working to create jobs so we can get back to work? No. Are you working to extend unemployment? No. Are you working to stop the foreclosures? No. Are you working to get tax revenue from the wealthiest? No. You're beating up on poor people. I will finish up. People in this state and country are fed up. We're fed up with politicians protecting the corporate elites and the 1% while you slash away at the few programs left to help poor and working families. And finally, this is what we want. Instead of putting a 3-year time limit on welfare, we want a 3-year time limit on poverty. We want a 3-year limit, lifetime limit on corporate welfare, on corporate tax loopholes, on tax breaks for the rich.
Ms. Knitschny.
Instead of making welfare, ineligible because of history of drug offense, we want you to kick corporations off all public funds and tax giveaways because they're committing the real offenses. They pay their CEOs hundreds more than their workers. They're weaseling out of tax. I am finishing up. They're weaseling out of taxes that they know they must pay. These are the offenses that you should be focusing on, that the rich are getting richer while we're falling further behind. The offenses that you're committing right here in this committee, right now, under the guise of legislation, are the most criminal offenses of all. You're willing to put our lives at risk to earn yourselves political points.
Eight testifiers.
Those who are writing bills like this are the true offenders. You need to stop these hateful attacks on the people of Minnesota. You don't have the right to your public funds you're getting for your job when what you are doing is using your position to attack the public in this state. This is a crime.
We could have order. I would remind people that much as in the House rules, we have committee rules that talk about intent. We are here to talk about the bill and its relative merits and have allowed plenty of leeway. But we have a number of testifiers yet, and we want to be talking about the bill and its implications. All right, the next testifier is Dan Kitzberger. Mr.
Thank
Kitzberger,
you.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dan Kitzberger. I'm the policy director at the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. And we're comprised of over 150 member organizations throughout the state. This includes people experiencing homelessness, service providers, and local units of government. The coalition advocates for policies to end homelessness and also to prevent it. The proposed changes to MFIP and House File 2080 would not do either. On behalf of all families with children who lack stable housing in Minnesota, we ask you to consider the impacts before cutting bare-bones assistance. Parents who turn to MFIP often work low-wage temporary jobs. The hours are irregular and unreliable at best. There are your servers, retail clerks, personal care assistants, and administrative assistants. In an extremely competitive job market, many of these jobs pay less than $8 an hour. When they lose or can't find work, many don't qualify for unemployment like you or I would. The recession hit families in these situations the hardest, and the effects are still felt. Standing behind low-wage working parents are their children. 66% of MFIP enrollees are kids. I know you said 62, but it's actually 66. Families with children make up the largest fastest growing demographic of people experiencing homelessness in Minnesota.
Mr. Kitzberger, how much longer?
About a minute. 30 seconds.
30 seconds would be good. Good answer. Thank you.
And on a given night, 3,900 children are homeless in our state. If our goal is to help families move to permanent work, policy reform should be directed at the low-wage job market and not people in it. The coalition helped the Bipartisan Legislative Commission to End Poverty create viable policy recommendations to help families gain self-sufficiency. We strongly oppose House File 2080 and would look forward to working together on advancing reforms recommended by the commission. Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you again for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. I would mention also that the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless has a handout that's been distributed to all committee members as well. We have time for one more testifier before we have some discussion. We're going to vote on this bill before we leave. And the next testifier is Kenza Hajmusa. Kenza, if you want to come down to the testifying table.
Mr. Chair, we have a video, but we are happy to just send the link out and have the next testifier go.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. The next testifier is, let's see here. Okay, we have Reverend Mark Peters.
Brian, do you wish to come here too so we can unify
faith? I'm sorry, Deborah Housie. You're correct. I got it out of sequence here. Not trying to... And we have time for only one more testifier, I'm afraid, because we're running out of time.
My name is Deb Housie, and I am against this bill. This bill will only put children and families deeper in poverty. I am one of the 99%, and sanctions is not the way to go. We should have a bailout, just like our companies had a bailout. We should have a bailout, and I think it is very against the law for people not to be able to travel back and forth so that they can be able to eat when they are on vacation. I don't think that's a good deal to for the EBT card not to be used in other states so that children and families would be able to eat while they're on their vacations. And I think about the time limit. The time limit is already 27% jobless rates right now. There is no jobs out there to be found. And I think families should be working for families that have jobs, that have a stable income, housing, health. There's just so much that's going on with this bill. I just hope that you all really look at this bill and see what it is doing to our community and our families.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you to all the testifiers. I would remind you as well, this bill is expected to have a hearing in Health and Human Services Finance Committee as well. Members to the bill. Representative Hosh.
Mr. Chair, I think it's... you know, disappointing that we couldn't hear from everybody here today, and that, you know, there's few bills that are going to affect more people, and especially more children, than this bill. And that's the reality. And it, you know, it's kind of ironic that today the governor signed a bill that would require basic skills testing for our teachers. I think this committee has a lot to learn for, you know, how does the economic assistance programs in Minnesota work? Who does it affect? What are the situations that these policies will have on people, and we need to learn more about it. That is our duty as a committee that focuses on the policy, and I think it's unfortunate. And members,
Representative Hosh, I would point out that I said at the very outset we would be fair in offering both sides of this issue. The bill author presented for 10 minutes, and we went the rest of almost a half an hour on testimony. So,
and Mr. Chair, I think on bills of this gravity, I don't think it's a surprise that we had a lot of people here today, and we should have had more time for it. Mm-hmm. This is our chance for us to learn and to understand its impacts. And there was people of high regard and of high consequences from realizing high consequences from this bill that weren't able to speak. I move that we table the bill.
Motion to table is non-debatable. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Nay. The motion does not prevail, and the bill is not tabled. All right. Members, Representative Fritz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm actually stunned that this is not tabled today on Ash Wednesday. We should be practicing the corporal works of mercy. This is what this committee is about. We should be thinking and finding ways to feed the poor, not take food from the mouths of their children. I'm very, very disgusted with this bill. This does more harm than I can ever imagine. I cannot believe that I am sitting in a committee today that is hearing this, especially on Ash Wednesday.
Members, seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File... Okay, members, we're going to go ahead and
vote. The 99%!
Those in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
The 99%!
The motion prevails. The bill is adopted.
We
are
the 99%! We are the 99%!
Members, there will be no further before the committee. We stand adjourned.